now on its 157th day, the Israeli genocide in Gaza claims more civilian lives as the death toll tops 31,000, mostly women and children. Palestinian resistance fighters carry out more retaliatory operations against Israeli forces in Gaza, inflicting losses and casualties on them. And on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan, Israeli forces blocked the entry of hundreds of Palestinian worshippers into Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hello everyone from the studios in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Israel keeps pounding Gaza, killing more Palestinians in fresh strikes across the besieged territory. The regime's warplanes have struck an area near the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. The camp itself was also targeted in an air raid. In Gaza City, the dead bodies of 10 Palestinians were recovered from under the rubble of a house and were then transferred to Al-Shifa Hospital. Israel's genocidal war on Gaza is now in its sixth month. The death toll has passed 31,000, most of them women and children. The war has reduced much of Gaza into rubble as Israel's relentless attacks target a wide range of buildings from schools to mosques. According to Gaza's government media office, 220 mosques have been completely damaged since October the 7th. Israeli forces have intensified attacks on residential buildings in central and southern Gaza in the past 24 hours. Let's listen to our correspondent in Deir al-Balah, Moti Abu Musabbeh, who joined us earlier for more details.
The Israeli occupation forces maintained and continued their airstrikes against several areas in Gaza Strip. Those airstrikes actually were intensified over the last couple of hours against Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Another residential building was destroyed. At least three Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed, while dozens were injured in that attack. It's worth mentioning that over the last night, the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre after destroying a residential square in the Nusayrat refugee camp that included several residential buildings in addition to stores and warehouses and shops, and a big fire actually engulfed those houses and those shops there. At least nine Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over the last attack. And in the meantime, the Israeli artillery maintained shelling the eastern part of Deir al-Balah city here as we are standing right now. While in Gaza City, the Israeli warplanes also renewed their strikes against several residential buildings. Another residential building was destroyed and flattened, particularly in the southern part of Gaza City. At least nine Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over the last couple of hours over that attack. And in the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis City, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking Hamad neighborhood located in the area between Deir al-Balah City and Khan Yunis City. More residential buildings were blasted and blown up by the Israeli occupation forces. Meanwhile, the eastern parts of Khan Yunis City also were subjected to more attacks of the Israeli occupation forces as more residential buildings in Al-Qarara neighborhood were destroyed and blasted by the Israeli occupation forces.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has blamed the Israeli regime for the failure to reach an agreement on a ceasefire in Gaza. In a statement, the Hamas political bureau chief said the movement will not settle for anything less than a full cessation of Israeli aggression and the withdrawal of the occupation forces from Gaza. Ismail Haniyeh said Israel has evaded providing guarantees required for a ceasefire during the talks held so far. He added that Israel has not even committed to having people return to the areas they were pushed out of. Haniyeh noted that Hamas has shown great responsibility, positivity and flexibility in the negotiation process mediated by Qatar and Egypt. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has inflicted losses on Israeli forces in its fresh retaliatory attacks in Gaza. The Al-Ghassan Brigade said its fighters managed to detonate a building in an undisclosed location in Gaza, killing and injuring a number of Israeli infantry forces. It added that resistance fighters clashed with another group of Israeli troops inside a tunnel, which caused several casualties amongst the invaders. The military wing of Hamas also said that an Israeli engineering corps soldier was shot in the head in an area near the southern city of Khan Yunis. And in northern Gaza, the Al-Ghassan Brigades targeted an Israeli military post using a drone. Another Israeli soldier was also targeted by resistance snipers in Gaza City. Palestinian resistance fighters have been putting stiff resistance to Israeli soldiers since the start of the regime's ground invasion of Gaza. Meanwhile, veteran French lawyer and academic Gilles De Vere has told Press TV that he is building an army of attorneys to defend Palestinians in international tribunals. He has already filed a complaint with the International Criminal Court to bring Israel to justice for its genocide in Gaza. Let's take a listen.
When we filed the complaint on the 9th of November, through a simple call and through pre-existing contacts, very quickly, in only 1 week, we had 650 lawyers on board coming from all over the world, from Pakistan to Chile to European countries, Africa, from all over the world. So that's when we decided to take a different route. We started working together, going from country to country with the help of bar associations. And at the moment, I believe that there is more than 100,000 of us lawyers. Of course, that is mainly because in some very large countries, national bar associations have endorsed our efforts, and this has greatly empowered us. For example, Algeria, and then Morocco. Of course, Morocco's case is a little more complicated, but we still have very influential attorneys who have signed our papers. Palestine, which of course was the first to join in, and with which we are working closely. There is a lot to be done, and our Palestinian counterparts are doing their best. Indeed, you must note that the power of lawyers allows them to go to court and address the prosecutor, and go to the International Court of Justice and say, this is a matter of legal concern for professionals in this field, those who understand what is happening from a legal perspective, and those who demand the judicial system do its job. And this army of lawyers is one that I can say will always be available. Palestinians are under bombs. Palestinian children are suffering. The elderly, the sick, are dying from famine. We will defend their rights. We will defend all Palestinians.
Israeli forces have denied hundreds of worshippers entry into the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan. Eyewitness accounts indicate that Israeli troops detained citizens at the gates of the mosque and blocked their access to it. The regime's forces also imposed restrictions on young men entering the mosque. Meanwhile, Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement denounced the move. It said the desecration of the mosque by Israeli forces and settlers and refusing worshippers access to it amount to, quote, playing with fire. The Israeli regime has kept the Al-Aqsa Mosque under a tight siege for 5 months, denying worshippers entry into the holy site. The leader of the Ansarullah movement has vowed that the Yemeni armed forces will continue their operations in support of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Abdul Malik al-Houthi was referring to the attacks launched against the Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. He condemned the Israeli regime for what he called crime of genocide committed against the Palestinians in Gaza. Al-Houthi praised the Yemeni nation for the massive pro-Palestine rallies held across the Arab country. The Ansarullah leader warned that the repercussions of not supporting Palestinians would affect the entire Muslim world.
Now, top Yemeni official Mohammed Ali al-Houthi has warned the U.S. against the continuation of its hostile actions in the Red Sea. He stated that the Yemeni army is fully aware of the loopholes in American aerial operations, which can be exploited during the takeoff or landing of U.S. fighter jets.
The movement of the American, British, and Israeli enemy are monitored by our forces, especially in the context of the recent escalation during which we witnessed airstrikes against Yemeni territories. Our monitoring includes any takeoff or landing to and from American ships. We are able to target them, and our operations are legitimate in defense of our brothers in Gaza and in defense of our land that is being targeted by American airstrikes.
According to experts, Yemen always sends several warnings to enemies before taking any military action. They say the militarization of the region will only result in escalation of the conflict, which will also impact the rest of the world, including Europe and America.
The presence of American forces and the battleships in the Red Sea put them within the reach of our weapons. And thus the Yemeni leadership's warning to America indicates that the Yemeni armed forces have the ability to hit enemy forces, including warplanes stationed on aircraft carriers. When these aircraft take off, they can be dealt with by appropriate weapons, whether ballistic missiles or drones. The continued presence of American forces in Yemeni regional waters will further complicate the situation, and the region does not need more militarization. And if the situation escalates here, the consequences will reach America and Europe.
In November 2023, Sana'a announced a naval siege on Israeli maritime navigation in solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine. However, the US and UK launched several attacks on Yemen in order to stop its operations against Israeli-linked ships and the Red Sea. Since then, the Yemeni army intensified its maritime attacks against American and British vessels in retaliation for their aggression.
Experts say the Yemeni army, despite its limited capabilities, has succeeded in exposing the weaknesses within the U.S. military, which is regarded as one of the most powerful in the world. They argue that following the recent warning from Yemen, the U.S. must cease its intervention in regional waterways to salvage its reputation on the global stage. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Lebanon's Hezbollah movement says it has targeted the Israeli Meron settlements with dozens of Katyusha rockets. This comes in response to the regime's latest attacks on southern Lebanon, which left five civilians, including four members of the same family, dead. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent Mariam Saleh in South Lebanon to get more details about the developments. Let's take a listen.
Well, actually, in the last 45 minutes or so, we were hearing sounds of explosions nonstop, especially in the area behind us, which is the occupied Shuba Farms and the Kfar Shuba Hills. We learned later from Hezbollah statements, at least two, that there were simultaneous operations, both in the Al-Sumaqa post and the Al-Ramtha post. Now, because of the clouds hovering over the area, the Shuba Farms, because they're pretty high, mountains, were unable to show you the exact base, but it seemed that Hezbollah's rockets reached areas that are even behind those mountains as well. So even also simultaneously, in addition to the sounds of Hezbollah's rockets that were pounding the Shuba Farms post, there was also another significant operations against the area of Ma'ali Golan, which is also right behind the Shuba Farms post. And also we had a big number of operations, if I can just walk you through them, in addition to the Ma'ali Golan, which was targeted by the use of rockets and anti-tank, it seemed, rockets. We also had a Burkan rocket that reached a group of soldiers in the Al-Rahab post. We also had another attack against the Al-Radar post, which is also in the occupied Shuba Farms, where Hezbollah said it destroyed devices and hardware in that post specifically. There was another attack and targeting of the Israeli armored personnel carrier Namer, which is considered one of the vehicles that the Israelis are proud since they manufacture. It seems that has lost its reputation.
Pro-Palestine protesters in Amsterdam have slammed a visit by the Israeli president to the Dutch capital. The pro-Palestine campaigners gathered outside the Holocaust Museum, where Isaac Herzog attended the opening ceremony. They chanted slogans against Israel's genocidal war against the besieged Gaza Strip, calling for boycott of the regime. They also waved Palestinian flags, urging for an end to the occupation of the Palestinian lands. People in Pakistan have organized the Gaza March to denounce the international community's silence regarding Israel's onslaught on the Palestinian territory. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi reports from Islamabad with further details.
Chants echoed through the streets of the Pakistani capital Islamabad as thousands of demonstrators gathered to condemn the United States and Israel. The protest, organized by Pakistan's largest religio-political party, Jamaat-e-Islami, saw passionate crowds marching through the streets, expressing solidarity with the Palestinian cause and denouncing Israel's actions, which take place with the support of the U.S.
Of course, there should be a ceasefire long ago. But even now, we are pressing for it. And you have seen how irresponsible and insensitive Biden has been responding. He was just having ice cream and talking about ceasefire as if it was a very casual affair. And on the other hand, the way children are dying, women are dying from morning till night, and especially there are a lot of prisoners which are taken by Israel. And there are large number of women and children who have been taken as prisoners, and their condition is pathetic.
The acts of solidarity in Pakistan reflect widespread outrage and sympathy for the plight of the Palestinian people.
As a Pakistani citizen, I think that our government should immediately call for a ceasefire and boycott all the products that are supporting the Israeli aggression in Palestine. And I also want to say that the whole world should come out of their houses and protest, because the kids, Palestinian kids, are starving right now, and they are being starved, and they are scared, and they are homeless, and they have nothing to eat and drink, and they are dying. And how can anybody bear that?
The protesting Pakistanis called on the government to cut its ties with the U.S. over what they call the barbaric role in the killing of innocent men, women and children in Gaza.
People here in Pakistan are concerned about the ongoing atrocities committed by Israeli forces in Gaza. They are demanding that the international community enforce an immediate ceasefire by bringing the U.S. and Israel to the International Court of Justice for their war crimes in Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
There you have it. Those were the top stories. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, at least seven Palestinian civilians in Gaza were killed looking for signals in late January and early February, often in areas where the Zionist regime military has taken full control on the ground, like northern Gaza. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, on the morning of February 10th, Mohammed Obeid, 26, left the home of relatives in Nusayrat refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip, where he has been sheltering to try to get a signal on his phone. It didn't go well. The signal in the camp was weak, and he, along with a couple of other young men also in search of a signal, had wandered toward Salahuddin Road, which runs almost the whole length of Gaza, north to south. They were still hundreds of meters away from the street when Obeid saw an Israeli regime drone heading straight for the group. Obeid said, I wanted to get an internet signal because I was using an eSIM and needed to check on my sister and her sons still in the north. But then the drone started approaching. The men turned and ran, but too late. The drone, a quadcopter equipped with a rifle, opened fire and Obeid was shot in the back. Another man was also injured and both were rushed to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in the city of Deir al-Balah. They are not the only casualties of a desperate search of connectivity. High ground is often sought by people looking for a signal. It's a risky affair. Higher ground, hills, the tops of buildings, open areas are closely monitored by the Zionist regime drones and regularly targeted. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, at least 7 civilians were killed looking for signals in late January and early February, often in areas where the Zionist regime's military has taken full control on the ground, like northern Gaza. The human rights group said Israel particularly targets civilians trying to pick up communications and internet signals in besieged areas where serious human rights violations are occurring in an attempt, the group continued, to prevent press coverage of and make it difficult for residents to report such violations. Ismail Al-Masri, 30, had tried to pick up a signal in Tel al-Za'atar area of northern Gaza. He wanted, according to his brother Muhammad, 28, to send out a video containing a plea about starvation in northern Gaza from a group of young people who were, like him, sheltering at the school. Run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, the school is located in Jabalia Camp, northern Gaza. Before he managed it, however, he was shot and killed by what Muhammad said was an Israeli regime sniper. He said, "My brother was killed with a single shot to the back of the head. We don't know where the sniper was, but at the same time, on the same day, on February 8, 3 others were shot and injured." Since October 7th, the fabricated regime of Israel has completely cut off telecommunications and the internet from the Gaza Strip at least 10 times, according to the Euromed group, often just before an escalation. The Zionist regime military has almost completely destroyed Gaza's telecommunications infrastructure. Cards, known as eSIMs, have become a vital way for Palestinians in Gaza to try to maintain communication with their relatives and friends, as well as a primary means by which to communicate with the wider world. Being all electronic, eSIMs have the added advantage that they can be bought from abroad for people in Gaza to use. Ahmad Sharaf, 30, a resident of downtown Gaza City, was killed on December 10th when he was trying to pick up a signal from the top of their building. According to his brother, Zaid Sharaf, 25, who has since been forced to evacuate to Rafah, he and Ahmad had been trying to contact a third brother, Majed, who lives in Belgium, to tell they were fine. Zaid said, "My brother was standing on the roof to pick up a signal. We hadn't gone up there for days, but we need to give some sign of life to Majed. I stayed only a little, but when I went down the stairs, I heard a drone and the ground of a missile. The roof, I found Ahmad there, who had been killed." The Sharaf family had already lost 10 relatives earlier in December when the Zionist regime attacked an apartment in the building where they live, Zaid said. "I will never forget how the Israeli occupation bombed our neighbors' homes and killed our brothers and relatives. I cannot forget those terrifying days. My brother did not pose any danger to Israel. He just wanted to call my older brother."
Food for thought.
The Lady of Light, the Holy Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, has been quoted in explaining the philosophy behind some of the basic tenets of Islam in the following passage. Never become angry with others and do not ask anything from them. Wish for the people whatever you wish for yourself.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the constant battle between good and evil. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's an honor to be here, dear friends. We're talking about Islamic lifestyle, and we are talking about the constant battle between good and evil. Now, this is something that is really very ultra macrocosmic, right? We find that it is true when it comes to the historical aspect of humanity. We find that there is this great battle between good and evil. But when we're talking about Islamic lifestyle, it's kind of important for us to get out of this cosmic battle of good and evil and kind of move towards this very personal and very practical battle between good and evil in our own daily life, in our own Islamic lifestyle. Now, we have to keep in mind here that, yes, this is a constant battle, a battle between us as a human being that are trying to attain perfection, that are trying to attain a pure and blessed Islamic lifestyle. This is on one hand, and on the other hand, it is this complete enmity of Satan and this complete enmity of the satanic forces, and their purpose is to take us away and prevent us from achieving that Islamic lifestyle and prevent us from achieving that ultimate perfection which Allah the Almighty has ordained for us. So now we see and we understand this battle between good and evil that is happening on a very personal level for every single one of us. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about this great battle between good and evil. You know, we said how, yes, there is a cosmic battle between good and evil that is happening, but there's also a very personal level of this battle that's happening with every single one of us. And that is us as a human being trying to attain this ultimate perfection which the Almighty God has ordained for every single one of us. And it is the Almighty Allah which has provided the means for us to be able to attain this ultimate perfection, this eternal happiness, both in this world and the next. But of course, whether it is out of pride or jealousy or perhaps a whole various different host
of reasons. Satan and the satanic forces, on the other hand, they tried their best to prevent us from attaining that perfection. And as we said, maybe it's arrogance, maybe it is jealousy, maybe God knows what it is. But what is definitely sure is that they want to prevent us from attaining perfection. And so this is the constant battle between good and evil that we face ourselves. This constant desire for us to attain perfection, to become moral, virtuous human beings, and for us to be able to manifest these moral teachings, this wise behavior, this ultimate attainment of a perfect Islamic lifestyle. And on the other hand, of course, are these evil and base desires, or these evil and base aspect that if it is not under balance, it will surely take us towards immoral and perverse behavior, which is, of course, what the forces of evil want us to do. So just always keep fighting and always have faith in Allah and always ask help from Allah. And we will be able to, on a very personal level, win the battle on behalf of the side of good in our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will focus on Netanyahu's threats to attack Rafah and the possibility of military action there regarding the political issues and the captives. This is while the occupation regime has announced the release of two captives in Rafah in a complex military operation. In addition, there are ongoing contacts to conclude an exchange deal, as well as protests and demands to overthrow Netanyahu's administration to hold early elections. Regarding these topics, I welcome the specialist in Israeli affairs, Professor Ali Haida. Welcome to Israel Watch, dear Professor. So, after the occupation army announced the release of two captives in Rafah during a complex military operation, as they put it, the Zionists began advertising that we can address the issue of the captives without negotiations. But this event will not have a major impact on this issue. The impact of the release of the two captives on the issue of the entire captives have laid the groundwork for those who oppose the captives exchange deal to take advantage of this event and escalate their opposition. Professor Ali Haida, how do you assess the release of the two captives in Rafah in a complex military operation that was prepared for a long time, knowing that the two captives were in the possession of a Palestinian family, not Hamas, according to Osama Hamdan, the former senior representative of Hamas in Lebanon?
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. In fact, Netanyahu needed such an achievement to justify his positions of refusing to submit to the demands of the Hamas movement in the negotiations in order to continue the genocide. However, the event, in its circumstances and the number of captives, does not change anything from the overall scene. Rather, we can say that it'll be just a passing event. For 2 or 3 days, the world will forget this achievement because 134 captives are still held by the Hamas movement. And therefore, Netanyahu is looking for such tactical events here and there in order to influence public opinion and create for himself a solid foundation to continue the war. This war, in addition to its strategic dimensions, also favors Netanyahu personally. He needs this war to stay in power.
Professor Ali Haider, between the impact of the recent captives release operation and the captives exchange deal, how do you evaluate the Zionist approach regarding the captives?
There, the division still exists at the political level and at the popular level as well, to the point that for the first time in opinion polls, 51% of the Israeli population now supports an exchange deal, even if it comes at the expense of a ceasefire. This is a shift in public opinion that portends what Netanyahu fears. It heralds more transformations because protests are escalating among the families of the captives. All of this is due to the failure to achieve the goals declared so far, not only a failure with regard to eliminating the Hamas movement, which the United States has also begun to say is impossible, but also even at the level of liberating the captives. These could be serious achievements before the eyes of the public, but they have not happened so far.
Here it means that after more than 4 months, Netanyahu has been able to release only two captives, and his attempts have failed on previous occasions.
Yes, the two captives were not held by Hamas. There is news out there, but it needs to be verified. There are talks about a deal with those holding the captives and so on. These things are being said, but I want to emphasize that it is just a passing event whose impact is fleeting and does not change anything in the political scene. The problem is with Netanyahu. No matter how much he tries to find temporary solutions, the effects are not enough to bring stability for his administration.
Indeed, the protest against the way Netanyahu and members of his administration have dealt with the captives at the hands of the resistance in Gaza are escalating day after day. Demands have grown from an exchange deal to overthrowing Netanyahu's administration and holding early elections. Rarely does a session of the Zionist administration pass at the present time without disagreements, divisions, and tensions amongst its members over the management of this aggression against Gaza and the captives exchange deal that is being negotiated. In the last session, there was a rebuke from Netanyahu to ministers in Likud who did not oppose Hamas's terms for the exchange deal. Netanyahu's government is on its way to disintegration. If a deal is concluded for the exchange of the captives with the resistance, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich will withdraw from it. And if it is not concluded, Gantz and Eisenkot will withdraw from it. In both cases, the administration will disintegrate. I mean, according to the Zionist analyst, if the exchange deal is concluded or not, the Netanyahu administration is on the path to disintegration. Opinion polls say that 55% of Israelis want to go to early elections.
In fact, demanding early elections is what Netanyahu fears the most. And everything he does in security and politics is in order to avoid this scenario. But the administration structure may impose on him what he does not want and what is not in his interest. Here, I would like to refer to the significant point which was mentioned a moment ago. The Israeli captives have become hostages of Israeli policy and the internal disputes within the administration. This is because it is not in Netanyahu's interest to push for this deal and put it on the negotiating table with his administration members. This will fire up the situation between the two parties. Therefore, we can say that Netanyahu is keen not to appear as someone who is opposed to the deal, but rather wants the opposition to come from the ministers, whether from his party or from outside his party, so that he is not facing the captives' families. This has greatly affected his public standing in this field.
And the occupation's decision to launch an attack on Rafah. The Hebrew media have revealed the plan of the occupation army for the attack, starting with the evacuation of the displaced either to the northern Gaza Strip or to Khan Yunis. The matter is related to negotiations for the captives' exchange deal. The decision to attack Rafah was taken around 2 weeks ago, and the occupation army is waiting for this political decision to be taken and the Egyptians fear large displacement operations to its lands. Mr. Ali Haider, the decision to attack Rafah was taken 2 weeks ago, and the Egyptians do not oppose, but they only fear the displacement problems. What do you think?
Unfortunately, the conditions of some Arab countries have become such that the root of the Israeli attack on the Palestinians is not revealed or exposed, but rather it is reflected on them in a direct sense. And this is unfortunate. This is what dares the Israelis to commit massacres and launch attacks. Regarding this area, however, it is possible to talk about more than one point. The Rafah issue is no longer a field issue par excellence, but it has become an interactive issue that is overlapping and interacting with two other problems, which are the issue of negotiations over the captives and the issue of tensions within the administration. Given that the issue of field pressure through Rafah is the political goal of its timing now, it is linked to the captives' negotiations to pressure Hamas to make a concession. Therefore, the more negotiations falter from the Israeli and even American perspective, the more pressure will be needed through Rafah. It seems that there is an indication of a solution if we might seek some kind of freeze in the field to one degree or another in this area. Therefore, we are facing an issue that has become more complex due to its interactions with other issues. This is in addition to the American position, which has become clear that it is not against the operation, and rather we need a different plan in one sense, and also regarding the Egyptians' concerns. We're facing a multi-dimensional event intertwined with more than one local and regional aspect.
I mean, it is very complicated. The recent contact between President Biden and the head of the Zionist regime, Netanyahu, regarding the attack on Rafah and the captives' exchange deal, these issues caught the attention of the Israeli media, which have detailed some of what was revealed. Mr. Ali Haider, did Netanyahu obtain Biden's approval regarding the attack on Rafah?
First, there was certainly no serious American opposition. Second, there was perhaps a disagreement about some details and not the origin of the Israeli attack. Third, this position is not denied by the United States, but rather it has become public that we're not against the military operation in Rafah, but rather we need a reliable parallel plan, in a sense, to protect, as they say, the civilians. It has become clear to everyone that protecting civilians means more casualties. This American hypocrisy is therefore a matter of tension. These are provocative expressions with which they want to fool the Arab world and Arab public opinion. Unfortunately, I think more than 30,000 martyrs and more than 60,000 wounded should be enough to expose this hypocrisy. However, we do not actually need these numbers in order to know the truth.
Hamas is present, fighting in the Gaza Strip and imposing the terms of the exchange deal, and the occupation is still unable to remove it. Professor Ali Haider, what do you think about what the Zionist analysts are saying, that the resistance in Gaza is still strong? This actually contradicts what Netanyahu says about the imminent and absolute victory in the war.
In fact, the origin of the American-Israeli performance confirms that the assistance to the resistance is still strong. This means that even Netanyahu talks about the need to enter Rafah. If they don't, they will be defeated, for example. It means that Hamas still has its combat, military, structural capabilities, etc. This shows that Netanyahu seeks to mislead the public opinion through creating new terms, such as an absolute victory. Professionals, not only professional journalists in Israel, but also those who have security records, believe that, yes, we understand the topic of victory. It exists in military terms, but there is no such thing as absolute victory, especially in the face of resistance movements. In addition, what does he mean by the term absolute? Is what happened in northern Gaza an absolute victory? Rockets are still being fired in northern Gaza, and operations are carried out against the occupation forces. Is this absolute victory? Is it what happens in Khan Yunis, where Israeli forces suffer deaths and injuries every day? Is this an absolute victory? This means that in Rafah, we will be witness to the same scenario. I mean, basically, it is necessary to inscribe it if there is a root of victory, not just absolute. Therefore, in addition, I would like to point out that the introduction of the term victory is also new in Israeli terminology as an expression. I mean, the common term was decisiveness. It has a specific meaning. It has a specific physical meaning. It means eliminating the resistance capabilities, occupying their lands, and preventing their building capabilities. They know that these terms have become a thing of the past. It is no longer possible to make a military decision with the resistance movements. They replace this term with the term victory because it is characterized by a degree of ambiguity.
Professor Ali Haider, specialist in Israeli affairs, thank you very much for your participation in this episode of Israel Watch, and thank you for your good follow-up. Take care.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Donald Trump has secured a nearly $92 million bond to support the New York writer E. Jean Carroll's defamation verdict against him while he appeals the civil case. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump has secured a $91,630,000 bond for the judgment in his defamation case brought by the writer E. Jean Carroll. The former president obtained an appeals bond from the Virginia-based federal insurance company totaling $91,630,000 to cover the $83 million judgment in the case plus interest, according to a court filing on Friday morning, 8th of March. Donald Trump on Friday, 8th of March, also filed a notice of appeal of the judgment to the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Either paying the judgment or posting a bond for the judgment's full amount was required for him to move ahead with the appeal. President Trump respectfully requests that this court recognize the supersedious bond obtained by President Trump in the sum of $91,630,000 and approve it as adequate and sufficient to stay the enforcement of the judgment. To the extent that the judgment awards damages, pending the ultimate disposition of President Trump's appeal, Trump's attorney Alina Haber said in Friday's court filing. In a statement to ABC News, Alina Haber said they are confident that their appeal will result in the judgment being overturned. Due to the numerous prejudicial errors made at the lower level, we are highly confident that the Second Circuit will overturn this egregious judgment, Alina Haber said. The conditions of the bond did not specify what assets Donald Trump used to secure the bond. By posting a bond, Trump guaranteed that E. Jean Carroll can collect the judgment if the former president exhausts his appeal, former federal prosecutor Josh Naftalis told ABC News. The appeal process could take more than a year, Naftalis said. Trump is still appealing the $5 million judgment a jury awarded to Carroll last May after determining the former president had sexually abused her. The former president in January was ordered to pay $83.3 million in damages to E. Jean Carroll, a former Elle magazine columnist, for defaming her in 2019 when he denied her allegation that he had sexually abused her. Trump, who said Carol was totally lying and that she was not my type, has denied all wrongdoing. On Thursday, 7th of March, the judge overseeing the case denied Trump's request for a temporary delay of the penalties. Mr. Trump's current situation is a result of his own dilatory actions, Judge Lewis Kaplan wrote in his order on Thursday, 7th of March. He has had since 26th of January to organize his finances with the knowledge that he might need to bond this judgment, yet he waited until 25 days after the jury verdict to file his prior motion for an unsecured or partially secured stay pending resolution of post-trial motions. Judge Lewis Kaplan said that Trump failed to show how the judgment constitutes an irreparable injury or demonstrate the expenses he faces by posting a bond in the case. The expense of ongoing litigation in the absence of a stay does not constitute irreparable injury in the relevant sense of the term, Judge Kaplan wrote. The judge on Friday, 8th of March, took note of Trump's bond but declined to immediately stay enforcement of the judgment pending an appeal until he hears from E. Jean Carroll. If Carroll opposes the arrangements, the judge said, he will hear oral arguments on Monday. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story. Donald Trump has secured a nearly $92 million bond to support the New York writer E. Jean Carroll's defamation verdict against him while he appeals the civil case, his lawyer said in a court filing on Friday, 8th of March. The court filing came just one day after the Manhattan federal court judge, Lewis Kaplan, denied the former U.S. president's request to delay enforcement of the $83.3 million verdict jurors awarded to E. Jean Carroll on 26th of January this year. Trump's deadline for paying cash or posting a bond while he appeals is 11th of March. Donald Trump's attorney, Alina Haber, is asking Judge Kaplan to approve the bond, which is more than the verdict demanded, to cover interest. If Judge Lewis Kaplan does so, Trump will not have to pay the money to E. Jean Carroll yet, pending an appeal. The securing of this bond, however, does little to alleviate Trump's significant financial woes. As the Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Arthur Engoron on 16th of February ordered Trump to pay $355 million in New York Attorney General Letitia James's separate civil fraud suit against him. Letitia James's office has said that with interest, Donald Trump owes about $453 million. Friday's development came several weeks before Donald Trump will face his first criminal trial in the litany of indictments against him. On 25th of March, jury selection is expected to begin in Manhattan State Prosecutor's hush money criminal case involving the film actress Stormy Daniels. Meanwhile, E. Jean Carroll won $18.3 million in compensatory damages and $65 million in punitive retribution in her second defamation trial against Donald Trump. The jury's decision came less than 1 year after a Manhattan federal court jury awarded $5 million to E. Jean Carroll in her sexual abuse and defamation case against Donald Trump. In a June 2019 New York Magazine article which excerpted Carroll's then forthcoming book, What Do We Need Men For?, a modest proposal, she wrote that Donald Trump had raped her in a changing room in a Manhattan department store. Carroll said that the way Trump denied her claim ruined her reputation and career. She filed a lawsuit over these denials in 2019, as the state's civil statute of limitations at the time barred her from suing Donald Trump over a sexual assault. A new law in 2022 granted adult accusers a one-year window to file a lawsuit over incidents outside the civil statute of limitations. Eugene Carroll sued Donald Trump again, this time over the incident and defamatory comments that Trump had made after he was no longer president. Asked for comment on the securing of this bond, Stephen Chung, Donald Trump's campaign communications director, said, "A bond has been filed in the full amount of the baseless judgment in the Democrat-funded Carroll witch hunt, which is being appealed and litigated. All of the crooked Joe Biden-directed hoaxes will be crushed, and President Trump will make America great again." The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered this story. Former President Donald Trump deposited a bond of more than $91 million on Friday, 8th of March, to appeal the $83 million judgment against him in the case brought by E. Jean Carroll, a writer he defamed after she accused him of sexual abuse. Trump's attorneys notified the federal court in Manhattan that he had posted a bond of $91,630,000, coinciding with a notice that he had appealed the ruling to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. The bond payment is equal to 110% of the judgment against him, representing the amount he was required to provide to stay enforcement of the judgment while he appeals. The 26th of January decision was the second time in less than a year that a jury had ruled in favor of E. Jean Carroll, who accused Donald Trump of attacking her in a New York department store in the 1990s. In May of 2023, a different federal jury awarded E. Jean Carroll an additional $5 million in damages, finding Donald Trump liable for sexual abuse and a separate defamation claim. Jurors in both cases unanimously reached their verdicts within hours. The verdict in E. Jean Carroll's second trial came just weeks before a New York judge ordered Trump to pay more than $450 million for fraud. The combined decisions plunged the Republican candidate for president into severe financial turmoil.
América Latina y el mundo observa.
Latin America and the world observe in disbelief what is happening in Argentina. How is it possible for the people of a nation with so many democratic traditions of struggle, of workers' rights, of national construction, of the quest for national independence, to choose a character who is the complete opposite?
Que es todo lo contrario. Quien se reclama a narcoliberal, a narco-capitalista,
who claims to be a narco-liberal, a narco-capitalist, a Zionist, a son of the United States, who has said that he is going to end all state companies. Even now, at this moment, he has stopped delivering new contracts to existing state companies.
Nuevos contratos a las empresas estatales existentes.
They are finished. The same in health, in education in Argentina. The free education for a long time. Today, nothing. That has finished. How is it possible that this happens in a country that had those traditions? How did it come to that? Who paved the road? Yes, they will have to respond for what they were before. The people who applied policies that left the majority dissatisfied, the policies such as those that the International Monetary Fund imposed upon even